sincerely welcome those of you who are joining us for today's Kluwen seminar. Today's session, which will look at tribal consultation, specifically examining institutional controls in Indian Country, has been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Site Remediation and Enforcement. My name is Jean Balance, and I'm coming to you from the Superfund program here at EPA, where I'll be helping to moderate today's session. I'm going to cover a couple of basic housekeeping reminders and instructions before I turn things over to our presenters today. And the first one is a reminder that I've been echoing for the past few minutes, and that is to be sure that you have a copy of the presentation materials open in front of you today. If you haven't downloaded or pulled those up, one last reminder, you can find those materials on the seminar homepage, which you would have seen after you successfully registered for today's event. The homepage is a unique website that has a complete description of the session, including the title, the date, the time, an overview of the talk, a list of our presenters with their contact information, and you'll find links at the bottom of that same page to download the slides as PowerPoint or PDF. Alternatively, there's a button on the left of the side of the screen that says Go to Seminar, which will allow you to pull the slides up in a web browser window. So hopefully by now, everybody has pulled up a copy of those slides and is looking at slide number one, the title slide. I'm going to ask all of our participants to move along to slide number two, which is our housekeeping slide. And if you haven't figured it out by now, Kluwen seminars will function very similar to conference calls. Each of our presenters will be indicating or verbally guiding you through the materials, asking you to turn the page. So again, I'm on slide number two, the housekeeping slide. Cover a couple of brief reminders, and then we'll turn things over to our presenters. Those of you on the telephone lines, please place your phone on mute. You can use your own mute button or simply hit star 6 to mute your line. We will take a break and have time to talk with our presenters and have questions from the audience, at which point you'll be invited to unmute your lines. But until then, please keep your line muted. Remember, it's star 6 to mute your phone line. As I mentioned, we will take Q&A from the audience after we go through the formal presentation materials. For those of you that are streaming the audio online, you won't be asking questions out loud. Instead, you'll be typing up your comments or questions electronically. So I'm going to ask you to look at the interface through your web browser window now. Those of you looking at the slides online will see a series of numbered links that appear on the left side. You can use those numbered links to jump through the slides. Again, I'm on slide number two. You also see a series of orange icons along the top. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. You also notice an orange icon with a question mark located at the top of the slides. If you click that button, as long as your pop-up blockers have been disabled, a new window will open up, which will allow you to type up a comment or question for our presenters. When we get to that break for Q&A, I will read your comment or question out loud so that the presenters can answer it. You are encouraged to go ahead and start typing up those comments or questions as soon as they occur to you. You don't need to wait until the break, but please note I won't read them until we get to that break. The other thing I'd point out is you can also use that very same form to report any technical difficulties you may be encountering. Just be sure to include a phone number where you can be reached so we can have our support staff reach out to you to help fix any issues you might have. This event is being recorded and will be archived, and once that archive is available, we will automatically send emails to all of our participants to let you know how you can access that archive. If you're interested in other seminars we've offered on Kluwen, you'll find a link on the bottom of slide two for our current archive, which has well over 450 recorded seminars over the years that we've delivered here at the EPA. That's the end of the official reminder and welcoming message that I have for everyone. So I'm going to turn everyone over to slide number three, which is the start of the technical presentation. Again, today's session will look at institutional controls in Indian Country. Institutional controls are legal instruments or administrative mechanisms that protect people from exposure to contamination by limiting land or resource use before, during, and after an environmental cleanup. These controls include government controls like ordinances and permits, informational controls like signs and billboards, and proprietary controls such as recording the information in land records as a notice or deed restriction. EPA drafted a handbook that addresses utilizing institutional control specifically in Indian Country to guide EPA staff through tribe-specific issues such as trust land and subsistence living. EPA will soon begin consultation regarding this draft handbook, which will remain open through December 31st of 2012. In today's webinar, our presenters will describe the draft handbook, Institutional Controls in Indian Country, and then take questions. So I'm going to turn things over to our two presenters. Again, we have two individuals coming to us from EPA's Office of Site Remediation and Enforcement, and that's Kimberly Fedenentz and Cecilia DeRubbers. So ladies, on slide number three, feel free to begin your presentation.
Thank you, Jean. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for participating in today's webinar. As Jean discussed, this is tribal consultation for the Institutional Controls in Indian Country Handbook. Ceci and myself are EPA staff attorneys in the Office of Site Remediation Enforcement. Our office works on Superfund cleanup enforcement, so essentially the attorneys that accompany a Superfund cleanup. I am the tribal contact in the office, and Ceci is the institutional controls contact, and we collaborated to write this handbook for EPA staff. Today's agenda, we will do two things. First, we'll give an overview of institutional controls in general. Second, how they apply in Indian country, or how, you know, Indian country might change the typical scenario. And finally, we will open it up to questions and comments either about the document itself or just about how we're running the consultation process if you have questions about how to contact us or something. Our contact info, in case you need to cut out early, is on the last two slides, our email addresses and, email address and mailing address, and also Ceci's phone number. That is slide
13.
Thank you, Ceci. I want to point out before we begin that this is a draft. We had to synthesize some issues, so we wrote a draft as opposed to an outline for consultation. And I just wanted to emphasize though, that this is solely a draft. This is very malleable. We are very open to comments and suggestions, and they will definitely be incorporated. We've already actually gotten some comments that we do plan to incorporate. So we're here to look for input from tribes about this document, really to make it a better product. We are 100% open to comments. I just want to make that very clear. This is a draft. So with that, I will turn it over to Ceci to give an overview of ICs, and then she'll turn it back over to me in a few slides. Thank you.
So we should be on slide 4, so if you can just flip over there. Just to make sure that we're all on the same page, we thought it would be good to start with just describing what institutional controls are. So I'm going to just give a quick background about what they are and how they work. Institutional controls are non-engineered instruments such as administrative or legal controls that help minimize the potential for human exposure to contamination or protect the integrity of a remedy. A lot of people are familiar with engineered controls, which are physical, like caps and fences and groundwater, but institutional controls are used in conjunction with engineered controls, and they're things that are more like zoning or prohibition of how to use a particular type of land or constructive ways to monitor land. So institutional controls are used before, during, or after a cleanup. They may be, for example, in a situation where a cleanup is not to a background level. So you would need something like a deed notice to inform everyone of appropriate land uses to minimize exposure. Also, institutional controls are used in a lot of different types of cleanup. They're used in Superfund, RCRA corrective action, and an underground storage tank cleanups. So this handbook will actually apply to all those three different types of cleanups. So moving on to slide 5, slide 5 basically describes how there's a wide range of institutional controls. And that was covered a little bit in Jean's introduction, but I'm going to go into it in a little bit more detail. EPA generally breaks down the institutional controls universe into 4 categories, and they may be implemented by tribes, states, or potentially responsible parties, otherwise known as PRPs. So generally, there's 4 of them. First one usually is the proprietary controls, which are deed restrictions, such as easements and restrictive covenants. A deed restriction is essentially a promise in the title that refers to the use of land. For example, a PRP could promise not to dig on a particular site, or a tribe could promise not to dig wells. They're usually very site-specific, as opposed to the next category, which I'll discuss, which is governmental controls. Governmental controls are usually done by a local government or a state government, or they could be implemented by tribes. A classic example would be zoning or ordinances.
for example, an ordinance to not dig a well. And the advantage to governmental controls is that you have local government stewardship, but also that it can cover large tracts of land as opposed to a proprietary control. And they're often coupled together, and they work in tandem. The third category are informational devices, which usually are not enforceable, but are very helpful for informing the public or getting the word out about a particular use. And that really helps prevent exposure. So a very good example would be fish advisories or informational pamphlets about contamination. The fourth category are permits and orders that EPA uses as enforcement tools, and a classic example of that would be a consent decree. So let's move over to slide six. EPA generally has a wealth of resources on institutional controls, and I put the slide in there just so that if you want more information, you have the ability to get there. I know that sometimes EPA's website can seem very big and intimidating, so I just wanted to put the direct site to our IC policies and guidance. And then the second link is actually to our guide for planning, implementing, maintaining, and enforcing institutional controls. I know that's a really long name. We refer to it as the PIME. And it really is the sort of hub that would explain ICs if you want more information. And it covers concepts such as selection or monitoring and maintaining, which aren't really covered in this handbook if you're more interested in those subjects. So that brings us to slide seven, and Kimi will now be taking over.
Thanks, Ceci. So we'll talk about now this handbook regarding Indian Country. So why write the handbook? We're on slide seven, which is titled Why Write the Handbook. Despite the IC resources that Ceci mentioned above, none of them address Indian Country. So there was a gap of knowledge, and we received many questions about how ICs would work in Indian Country. We saw the need to write a handbook for EPA staff. Because this clearly affects Indian Country, and to produce a better document, we decided to open it up to tribal consultation to receive tribes' input. Because, I mean, tribes are the community that will be affected in this situation by contamination. And, of course, the tribe is the one that has the say in how future exposure will be prevented. So we decided to open this up to tribal consultation. It's not a rule or regulation. It's not a it's a guidance in the sense that it provides suggestions and characteristics that you might encounter when trying to implement an IC in Indian Country as opposed to in the States. We'll now move on to slide eight, which is titled Common Questions. So these are common questions that we received from EPA employees. There are questions about the intersection of institutional controls and tribal sovereignty. The question about how to, since not railroad sovereignty, and what are the different issues that arise, and how, like I said, how not to trample upon it. What are the different types of land ownership, trust land, just the basic questions about ownership patterns in Indian Country, how to conduct title search and record a deed restriction, what BIA office to go to, where the BIA office is located, questions relating to that, and how to effectively work with tribes. This isn't a mere glossary, though. I'd like to point out, it's not just a glossary of terms. This is Indian Country. This is what trust land is. This is what the Dawes Act is. It really fills in the nexus, and it provides practical considerations to prevent exposure to contamination. So it's broken into three parts. The three parts addressing, one, jurisdiction and structure, two, land records and title concerns, and three, working with tribes. So next, we will turn over to slide nine, jurisdiction and structure, the first part. So this section covers the basic concepts, as I talked about earlier. What is Indian country, sovereignty, BIA involvement, and when in the process to consult. In the Superfund context, is the easiest one to talk about. The remedy is discussed fairly early on, and we want to note that that's when IC should start being discussed. You don't want to finish the remedy and then, oh, what kind of IC are we going to implement on here? Because it's a process, and you need to work with many people, many governments. So when in the process to consult? Early. The concepts are applicable to all IC types, but especially the deed restriction notice situation. That particularly involves, of course, BIA's involvement, any approvals, any deed recording in BIA's land title records office. I'll give an example of how jurisdiction comes into play. There were some USTs in the city of Nez Perce, Idaho. Nez Perce. Nez Perce is within the boundaries of the Nez Perce Reservation. So some underground storage tanks were found under a road while Idaho Department of Transportation was upgrading the road. So the contamination was largely removed except for a portion that abutted a building. Couldn't knock down the building, so the contamination remained. Now, the question was, how do we notify everybody that this contamination remains to reduce exposure? Well, the how really goes to jurisdiction. Who has jurisdiction over the property? Well, there is the city, but the city is within the boundaries of the reservation. And so what Region 10, EPA Region 10, was the lead to the project. And so what they did is they filed a deed notice with the city of Nez Perce. They filed essentially information letters that the cleanup occurred with the governments. They filed one with the Idaho Department of Environment. They filed one with the city of Nez Perce, and they filed one with the Nez Perce tribe itself. They also encouraged all of the jurisdictions to work together to somehow come up with an ordinance or something that also alerts people to the presence of contamination on the site, in case the site is ever used for anything other than what it's currently used at, in case somebody wanted to dig a well, for example. So that's where jurisdiction comes into play. So moving on, we'll go to slide 10. Slide 10 is titled Land Records and Title Concerns. We heard a lot of questions about how to go about getting a deed restriction or filing a deed notice, how to get the tribe's approval, where land records kept. So we tried to outline the process, which is the technical steps. But secondly, we also went a little bit further here and discussed the effectiveness of deed restrictions or notices, because it's resource intensive to file a deed, to get all of the approvals. It's resource intensive, it's time intensive. So we thought about how effective it would be. And one of the things we realized is property isn't transferred quite as often as in the state. It's not sold between parties quite as often. You know, except for mortgages and, say, mining leases, transfer doesn't occur as often, so therefore the deed records won't be searched as often to know for someone to realize that, hey, there's contamination that's left on this land. So in certain situations, it might not be useful to go through the entire exercise of filing a deed notice. Or where the site is very small, for example, in a gas station, maybe a deed notice isn't the best type of IC to implement. Maybe you should look at other things such as governmental controls or an informational device. Those are the advantages and disadvantages that we really tried to discuss in land records and title concerns. So moving on to slide 11, titled Working with Tribes. Working with tribes, there's lots written about this subject, to involve the tribal chairman, to also involve the staff people that you will be actually working with on a daily basis. We also wanted to highlight, though, that cultural traditions could be important when implementing ICs, noting that sacred practices are a large part of cultural traditions, for which you might not, the EPA staff member, might not get a lot of detail, but it's still very important. We also put forth resources that are available to effectively work with tribes, such as the American EPA's American Indian Tribal Office, regional tribal office liaisons. Within EPA, we have a National Indian Law Work Group. We also have an Institutional Controls Work Group, and also the Conflict Prevention and Resolution Center, which is a center at EPA where we work through mediation and things like that, so that to help resolve any conflicts that may arise. Not saying that that would happen, but just resources are resources. So those are the three major topics: jurisdiction and structure, land records and title concerns, and working with tribes that we cover in this document, this handbook. As I noted at the very beginning, this webinar was to discuss the handbook and as part of our tribal consultation. So moving to slide 12, you see first is the EPA consultation website. Now, there's three tabs in there. There's a tracker tab, and in the tracker, it has all ongoing tribal consultation documents. Institutional Controls in Indian Country, this particular one, is second from the bottom. The title's there. My name, Kimberly Fadinas, is next to it. That's how you can find it. Those are the documents related to tribal consultation, which is this handbook itself, the plan, and after this webinar, it's recorded, and I will include a link over to this webinar on there. Also, my contact information is here, Kimberly Fadinas, my email address, and the mailing address. We just created a permanent email address. That's what OSRI Tribal Consultation at EPA.gov is. The consultation period is open now, and it will run actually through the end of February in 2013. We extended it. So we welcome any, if you want to provide just written comments, or if you would like to contact us to set up a consultation, you know, in a manner of your choosing, such as telephone or whatever, we can do that also. So the period runs through February. Ceci, do you have anything else to add before we open it up to questions from the audience?
No, I don't think so. This document is really for their review, and I think we're more interested in hearing what they have to say. I'm sure everyone's been sitting for half an hour and would like to talk and not listen to us. So we're actually open for questions. And our contact information is also on slide 13.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, ladies. So with that, we are going to begin the open question portion of today's session. So for those of you that are streaming the audio online, if you're listening through your computer, you're going to need to type up your comments or questions for our presenters. So if you're looking at your slides in a web browser window, there are a bunch of orange buttons or icons along the top. The second one from the right has a question mark icon in it. If you click that, a new window will open up so you can type up your comments or questions electronically. I'd encourage you to go ahead and click that button to do so now. While we wait for any questions to be submitted electronically, we'll go ahead and turn things over to our phone line participants. So if you're on the telephone and you have a comment or question for our presenters, please feel free to take yourself off of mute. You can unmute by hitting #6. Or if you used your own mute button, simply unmute using that. And remember, you can ask a question, you can make a comment, even if it gets into formats of comments. We do have a number of individuals who have joined us from both telephone lines as well as streaming the audio online all over the country, so I think we may have a couple people who are typing up their questions or comments now. So I would encourage you, again, if you're on the telephone lines, question or comment, simply hit #6 to unmute your phone line, and then feel free to ask your question or make a comment. You don't have to identify yourself if you don't want to. Okay. Well, I'll turn over to some of the electronic ones that have been submitted, and if you're still typing them up, go ahead and keep typing them. We have plenty of time to go through these questions. So I'm going to start with the first question that's been submitted online, and then we'll, in a few minutes, turn back to the phones. And this first one is coming in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they ask, where can we get a copy of the handbook?
Let's see. If you turn to slide, let me double check I have the right number. Slide
12.
There's the first bullet contains in web address epa.gov/tribal/consultation. Now, if you go to that page, there's three tabs across the top, and the one on the right is called consultation tracking system, something like that. Click on there, and all consultations that are going on within EPA right now come up. And if you scroll to the bottom, this document is second to the bottom, second to last, and you can download it there. It's in PDF form.
Also, that is the tribal tracker for all consultations, but if you do have any problems, just send an email to either of us, where our contact information is on slide 13, or to OSRI Tribal Consultation at epa.gov, and we can send it to you as well.
And I'll be sure to put a direct link to that on the resources page for today's event as well.
Great.
Excellent. Okay, so again, it was the URL is on slide 12. If you follow that to epa.gov/tribal/consultation, scroll all the way to the bottom of that, the second from the bottom, there's a link that appears on the right side, and that's where you can download a PDF copy. All right, our next question is also the same one. Please state and then restate where we can find the draft handbook. So just to be sure, I'm going to say it one more time. If you go to epa.gov/tribal, T-R-I-B-A-L, /consultation, C-O-N-S-U-L-T-A-T-I-O-N, you'll come to a page which have a whole list of items. Scroll all the way to the bottom, the second to the last item, there will be a hyperlink on the right side to the PDF version of the document. Since we do have a number of questions who've come in, very same question, someone is writing in from Montana, also from Seattle, Washington, asking for a copy, we'll do a couple of things. You can email our presenters and ask them, and they'll send you the direct link. I will also put a direct link on the resources page for today's session, and then I'll also go ahead and send an email to everybody who registered for today's session as well with that direct link. So shortly after we're done today, you'll get a direct link to download a copy of the document that they discussed today. The next question that we have coming in online, which is not about how to access the document, is coming in from Illinois, and they ask, can you describe an example where the EPA has worked with the RP or responsible party to choose the correct mix of ICs to address the corrective action?
I can't think of anything on hand because that's really more of a remedy selection question. Remedy selection tends to be very site-specific. I think maybe the NEZPR example would be a good example of trying to determine how to notify. That is actually a very good example of how working with EPA and the city and the tribe, they all decided to find a good cleanup. But one thing about this document is that this document doesn't actually discuss selection particularly. It's more about practical implementation. So I think that there are multiple ways, but finding the right mix is a very site-specific recipe. And so I think that there isn't anything that would really symbolize or encapsulate like the right way and method.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it goes back to, of course, every tribe is unique and you can't just give a prescriptive, this is how you should do it, because every tribal constitution is different. So, of course, that would, it doesn't make for a good global example. But, I would echo that the NEZPR situation, they, you know, haven't come up with a solution yet, but all the governments know that this gas station, this building has contamination at it and that everybody needs to know that there is contamination there for in case the future use changes. And so the EPA has tried to notify everybody, and that's sometimes that's the best you can do, but trying to notify and try to push them for a solution. So the final solution is, I'd say, in the works. So for the moment, we filed D notices and notified all the governments involved. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. Our next question is coming in from Richland, Washington. And they ask, how does EPA envision the relation between the remedial staff and record of decision? ICs are written into RODs, or records of decision, which means that residual contamination is too high for unlimited access and unrestricted use. Consultation starts much earlier in the remedial process.
I think that's one of the, again, that's sort of a selection question, but I think that it's one of the reasons why consultation needs to be so early in the process. And this document tries to discuss how consultation is a key part to making sure that there are effective ICs put in place and in order to be also protective. The ROD has its own process, which this document doesn't necessarily delve into, but if you are interested, I would suggest maybe looking at the PIME, which is, the link is provided on slide 6, and it discusses it not necessarily in a tribal-specific context, but it does sort of discuss how ICs are planned and maintained and implemented and the ROD process. So I would go to look there for leads and also to look at EPA policy in general.
Also, I would say that this handbook, I mean, it's a one of the things in the handbook is we emphasize that consultation needs to start early because there's so many moving pieces, consultation on ICs, and it needs to maybe be looked at earlier in the entire cleanup process. That's kind of one of the things that we hit on in the handbook.
Okay, great. We're going to take another question from online. And this is a question that I want to be sure there aren't any typos in it, so I'm going to read it. This is actually coming in from a tribe in Wisconsin, and they ask, have you been working closely with BIA Realty and, or it could be Realty, I'm not sure, and environmental staff to develop this guidance? I've run into some sticky problems with getting land into trust when there are deed restrictions.
I like the word Realty, but we'll just go with Realty. I think it should be Realty, maybe. So, yes, we actually did work with some DOI staff on this. That's the DOI and BIA staff. So getting land into trust is kind of a separate issue, and I understand where you're coming from, right, because if there's deed restrictions, then it's harder or impossible to put land into trust. And that's a separate issue that actually another office is working on. And so that would actually be a good point that we need to consider for here, consider how deed restrictions would affect the process. I'm actually writing that down right now.
It's an excellent comment.
Yeah, that's an excellent comment now that I really thought about it. And, you know, the BIA or DOI personnel didn't bring that up either. So I'm writing it down. That will be a problem. And as I said, that you know, we have a place in the handbook that discusses, you know, advantages and disadvantages of especially deed restrictions, and that's a great place for it. So we will definitely consider that comment. Thank you.
Okay, great. Let's go ahead and see if we have any comments or questions coming in on the telephone. So if you're on the telephone line and you have a comment or question, please feel free to take yourself off of mute. You can use your own mute button or simply hit, pardon me, #6 to unmute your phone line, and feel free to ask your question or make a comment. Okay.
Well, this is Kimi again. I'll just also bring up one comment somebody already gave us. They just pointed out that sometimes tribal constitutions have restrictions against encumbrances. There I go into legal sphere. speak. An encumbrance is a deed restriction, essentially. So there's a restriction against deed restrictions in tribal constitutions. And just somebody mentioned that point that, hey, you might want to just discuss that that exists. And so we actually also plan on addressing that. So that's the second comment we got on this document.
Okay, again, any other comments or questions coming in from the telephone lines? All right. I myself am having a slight technical glitch on one thing, so I don't want to close out the online question queue until I resolve this issue. We did have one or two more questions come in looking for the location of the document. Again, there's a URL that was shared on slide number 12, if you're looking for a copy. It's epa.gov/tribal/consultation. And on that page, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, the second from the last bullet on that page does have a link to download a PDF copy of the institutional controls document. I've also gone ahead and directly emailed that link to everyone who registered for today's event. So if you check your inbox now, you should have an email from me with the link to download that PDF file. All right. So any other comments or questions coming in from the phone lines? Again, it's #6 to unmute or using your own mute
button.
Sure, go ahead.
All the questions and the answers that you guys have, answered, are they going to be sent out email as well?
Actually, this webinar is being recorded, so therefore it can be accessed at any time. I hadn't thought about emailing out responses. I guess I would have to transcribe everything. But there will, yes. If you're, are you asking about like a formal response, as in, you know, tribal consultation comes with formal responses from the federal agency? Is that what you mean?
Well, just all the questions that people were asking, whether it was by computer or on the phone, and you guys answered them. Are you going to be able to send those out?
We ultimately plan to have a formal response to comment after the end of the comment period, and we would include these issues that are discussed on the phone and these questions. So, but that would be after the comment period is over. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, great. I do have another question that's come in asking about the format of comments, if they should be written in a particular way, if you prefer them emailed, faxed in. What's the best way to distribute comments on the document?
The best way is the email, just in case, you know, our mail goes through a very rigorous inspection system, and so sometimes the mail takes a little longer to get to us. I would email it, honestly, to osritribalconsultation@epa.gov. That's on slide 12. There is no format. Just preform your thoughts, and I will read them. No, really, we want this to be as friendly as possible, so just send me your thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. It doesn't look like I have any more questions in the online queue. One last time to see if anybody else on the telephone lines has a comment or question. Okay. I don't see any more. I don't hear anybody else on the telephone line. So with that, ladies, do you guys have any closing statements or comments that you'd like to make before I begin the closeout procedures?
No, I just wanted to remind everyone that consultation will be open through February, so you have plenty of time to read the document. Please feel free to contact us with, you know, your questions, your comments, requests for consultation, anything. And I thank you for your interest, and we really want to make this a better product, and I'm really interested in any comments.
Right. We can't thank you enough.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much. I'm going to go ahead and direct everyone on to slide number 14, which is almost the second to last slide in today's slide deck. And on that final slide, you'll find two very important links. The first link that you'll find is a link to the resources or links page for today's session. On that page, you'll be able to download a copy of the presentation materials. We're also going to post the link to that PDF copy of the draft report, where you'll be able to download that and, again, review it and provide your comments to our presenters. The second link that you'll find on slide number 14 is a link to our short feedback form. We would ask that you take just a minute or two to fill that out and let us know what you thought of today's session. If you experience any technical difficulties, feel free to go ahead and document that in the form. Please know I do read each and every one of those responses, and if you'd like to see future events delivered this way, filling out the feedback form is the best way we can make sure that that continues to happen. If you shared the line with multiple participants, once someone fills out the form, another person, there'll be a link that'll appear to let someone else fill out their own version of the feedback form, so you can have individuals submit their own form. If you're looking for verification or credit for participating today, we don't necessarily issue certificates at Clouin, but if you do fill out the feedback form, you can check a box on that form to have a confirmation email sent to you for your records. So if you keep that along with a copy of the slides and your registration email, that might be enough to get you credit with your accrediting institution. I'll ask everyone to go ahead and move along to slide number 15, which is just a short advertisement for us here at Clouin. We do try our very hardest to make sure we're available and accessible and connecting with individuals who are looking for information on cleaning up and characterizing hazardous waste sites. So not only will you find a great collection of resources on the website clouin.org, but you'll also find us in a number of popular social media events. So if you want to learn about free future online events like this, learn about new documents as soon as they're available, look for other training opportunities, or do other research related to cleaning up hazardous waste sites, take a look for us. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, as well as LinkedIn, and feel free to connect or follow us through those services. Again, I want to thank our organizers and our presenters who came from us from EPA's Office of Site Remediation Enforcement. I appreciate them taking the time to put together today's session. I also want to thank the almost four dozen individuals who joined us from all over the country. I hope that you found today's session to be a useful expenditure of your time and that we'll be able to either hear you or see you on a future Clouin seminar. If you were not participating at a location with internet access today, those links for the feedback form, as well as links to download a copy of the slides and the other resources, are active indefinitely. So you can always come back tomorrow or even next week if you need to get to those resources. Again, the session was recorded. You will automatically get an email from me once that recording is made available. And you do also have an email waiting for me already with the link to download the draft copy of the report for today's session. Again, thank you all so much for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you in a future session. This will be the formal conclusion for today's event. I hope you have a great rest of your day.